This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. Thrilled today to get to visit with a remarkable leader at the CommonSpirit Health System, the largest faith-based system in the country. We're talking today with Dr. Todd Strumwasser. Dr. Strumwasser is a president of one of the larger regions of CommonSpirit Health. He's going to talk to us about sort of what he sees, the intent focus on patient safety and quality, and a lot more. Dr. Strumwasser, can you take a moment, introduce yourself, and tell us a little bit about you and your career to start with?
Yes, thank you very much. My name is Todd Strumwasser. I started out in healthcare by going to medical school in Los Angeles. I then became an anesthesiologist and practiced for 25 years in the Seattle-Tacoma area of the state of Washington. During that period of time in my practice, I was a on and off a leader of a group of anesthesiologists. Then I became chief of staff of the hospital. I went to business school briefly, and then I became followed up in some various leadership roles at Swedish Hospital in Seattle, eventually becoming the chief executive of the two downtown campuses. I was then recruited to join what was then Dignity Health in California to run the four Bay Area hospitals. They, after a while, added the North State hospitals, bringing the total to seven. And then a couple of years ago, they added the six Sacramento hospitals. So I now oversee 13 hospitals for the Northern California division of CommonSpirit Health. It's been quite a journey.
And talk about sort of the transition in life from being a practicing physician to physician leader. Talk about what that transition was like. How did you think about that? You know, how did that evolve?
Well, Scott, that's actually a great question, and I was actually hoping that was going to come up because that kind of was the most important period in my life, really, was how was I going to pivot from being a practicing physician to overseeing potentially a healthcare system or hospital. And it was a challenge, and it took a lot of work because really as an anesthesiologist, all I knew was the operating room and what happened in the operating room. And there was a lot about healthcare I did not know. And there was a lot about business I did not know. And most importantly, there was a lot about people I did not know. So in these leadership roles, you have to learn how to hire, how to fire, how to manage people, how to get the best out of people, and how to work collaboratively. None of those are issues that are taught in medical school. And so I got a personal coach. As I say, I had to learn business on the job, and it was quite a journey. And it's taken a long time of lots of learnings to get to where I am today.
And what was working with a professional coach or personal coach like? Was that supplied by the system? Is it something you invest in yourself? And what was that like? And how did that look?
Yeah, the personal coach was actually one of the greater things I've done in my life. It was recommended or was offered by our healthcare system to anyone who was interested in it, and I took them up on it. And to be honest with you, it was a bit of a cold shower because it began with a 360-degree review where they interview all the people who work for you, who work with you, who work above you, and basically they're giving candid anonymous comments about what they see in you. And as I say, cold shower. I realized I had a lot to learn and a lot to improve upon. And fortunately, my coach worked with me around collaboration, around learning skills that I did not know. You know, as an anesthesiologist, I'll give you an example. You have to make decisions in a split second. You know, something's going badly in the operating room, you know, you have to figure out what to do. You don't get a task force. You don't, you know, seek other people's input. You do interventions and you do them quickly. Well, in healthcare administration, that's not how it works. It's a team approach. You have to give things a chance to marinate a little bit so you can make the best decision. Do you have all the information you need to make the best decision? And so these were things I had to learn, and fortunately I was able to. But it's interesting, as I said before, things that are not taught in medical school. In fact, the opposite is taught. You know, in medical school they teach you how to be independent, how to be autonomous, how to basically make quick decisions when you need to.
And take a moment on this question. There's so much noise in healthcare today. There's so many financial challenges. You know, you've got this slowing revenue growth, huge inflationary pressures. In all this, how do you keep coming back to the bedrock of patient safety and quality and trying to ignore some of the noise and do the best you can on patient quality and safety? I know you've been a huge proponent of really that focus. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, that's exactly right, Scott. You know, as you know, you can't really change who you are. And when you know, you go to medical school, you take the Hippocratic Oath, you work as a physician, there is a deep intrinsic value for human life that you see on a daily basis in your practice of medicine. So as I began to take these administrative roles and there were financial challenges, I saw a lot of my colleagues panicking. And what I realized was that I was used to seeing much more acute situations around patient care on a daily basis. And I felt that it was important to keep a calm head in these situations and really fall back on, as you put it, the things that are most important: human life, valuing human experience, our, you know, what do our patients experience, how are we giving the best care possible. And the whole safety and quality focus has always been intrinsic to my leadership values, because really, you know, I've always felt that if you're taking the safest, most high quality care of your patients, all the rest will follow along. You'll get market share, you'll get revenue growth. Now, obviously, there's been some overhead creep lately, and we're seeing inflationary pressures, as you talk about. But I have to believe that taking the best care of our patients will always be the right decision.
Thank you, Dr. Strumwasser. And take a moment on, when you're in a fascinating position, you've had this great medical career, then this great leadership career. What are you most focused on and excited about currently?
So I focus on a number of things, but one of the things I'm most excited about was, I was thinking recently how, you know, I have family and friends who phone me and ask me for medical advice, and they know I'm going to give them sound medical advice. I'm going to tell them, you know, well, you got back pain, you know, why don't you go see this guy or this person, have a physiatrist, physical therapy, whatever. And what I wonder to myself is, why can't we as a healthcare delivery system do that for all of our patients? Why can't we have the same certainty and assuredness that the advice and the treatment that we give our patients is the most appropriate and most thoughtful that we can possibly give? So what I mean by this is one of the things we don't measure very much in quality. You know, we measure lots of infections and readmissions and length of stay, but how about our patients getting the best treatment options that are possible, regardless of payment modality or payment quantity? And this is really what I'm passionate about right now. And what this involves is making sure that we hire physicians, or we align ourselves with physicians who have the strongest ethics and care the most about doing the right thing at the right time. Some of this is related to how we pay physicians rather than paying them to do procedures. How about if we pay them for outcomes? How about if we paying them for, you know, how quickly does a patient get back to work after a back problem? You know, so it's these kinds of decisions, these kinds of qualities that we should be trying to aspire to as we build the healthcare system of the future.
And let me ask you this concept of the outcomes-based measure, how quickly does somebody get back to work and so forth? So much of that depends on not just the physician, but the patient's sort of, you know, how well they attend to their physical therapy, how well they do other things, how healthy they were to begin with. I mean, and I see this so often, you know, a friend who is suffering from a rare form of cancer, the outcome depends so much on things outside of the physician's control. The physician will try as hard as they can, the patient will try as hard as they can, but it's really outside of their control. Somebody with a horrible shoulder injury that's now in rehab or physical therapy. Talked about getting back to work. She's very anxious to get back to work. But it seems like so much that it's dependent on how hard she works at her therapy versus what the physician did or didn't do. So when you look at this, and everybody talks the talk about value-based and outcomes measurement, but take me a little bit further. Are there places where that works, where it really does relate to the physician? And are there places where that's just talk because it's really not within the physician's control?
You know, Scott, you're making a really good point. And there are things that are outside of the control of the physician. Some of them, these are referred to as the social determinants of health, whether it be education or socioeconomic strata. I think, you know, this is, you know, like the serenity prayer. We do the things that we know we can do and try to focus all of our attention on that. So if we're giving the best advice, if we're telling patients to stop smoking or telling them to lose weight, you know, we're not going to follow them around afterwards to make sure that they comply with this. But we can only do our part in this. And if we're doing our part, we're doing a tremendous amount. The social determinants of health, which others have spoken of so eloquently, I think, you know, we definitely need to focus on that. But I think we need to mind our own shop right now and make sure that we're being the best versions of ourselves with our patients. And most of the time, I believe that we're going to have better outcomes. Clearly, we're going to have better outcomes if we're giving them the best advice. I mean, you know, you can't control how what the patient does with the advice, but we can make sure that we are not being motivated by profits, but motivated by good outcomes.
No, and I love the reference, quite frankly, to we can control what we can't control, we can't control what we can't control, and it's that wisdom to know the difference is so important. But all we could do is the very best we can do at it. And so much of this, of course, is based on not just social determinants of health, but also genetic makeup. And as we get better and better at precision-based care and so forth, hopefully we'll have more ability to impact for that as well. But no, you're so right. You're president now of the Northern Region at CommonSpirit Health, a great region. Talk a little bit about the pride in CommonSpirit Health. I mean, there's probably no more compassion-driven ministry, faith-based ministry in the country. Take one moment on the pride in CommonSpirit Health.
You know, I like working for based company like CommonSpirit Health. I'm not Catholic, but the values resonate with me strongly. Caring for the poor and vulnerable, doing the right thing. There were many times during the peak of the pandemic where we knew we were losing a lot of money. But we knew we also had a commitment to take care of people. And you know, I'll tell you what I was most proud of and what resonates so strongly with me is, you know, I had hospital presidents that were going out to farm workers in the fields and vaccinating them at our expense, knowing that this was the only way that we were going to get any control of this pandemic, was to get this vaccine out to as many people as possible. So this was all about doing the right thing for everyone. For me, that was, you know, COVID was an awful experience in many ways, but the silver lining was what it showed about us, was it showed about who we were and how we kept our services open. We did what we needed to do. We just put our head down and worked throughout this. And there was a lot of burnout. There were a lot of other problems. But I could not have been prouder of the people that work for me in the Northern California division, all the caregivers. You know, it was really a moment to remember.
Dr. Stromwasser, you're a remarkable leader. I'm thankful for you joining us today. I'm also appreciative of your remarkable team, and we get a chance to visit with some of them regularly. So thank you so much, and congratulations on your career and what you've done, and more importantly, the mission and what you're doing at CommonSpirit Health. Thank you,
Scott. Thank you for what you're doing as well. Thank you.